everyone, and welcome back to Dear Old World, my interview podcast where I have on my amazing, creative, talented friends to share with me their lives and stories and journeys. My name is Mary Kate, in case you're new here. I'm your host, and I originally created this podcast for my Patreon, but I got to where I had so many great interviews, I wanted to start sharing them with the world, and that's what you're listening to. If you'd like to hear more of this podcast, there is plenty more on my Patreon, including some episodes that will never be released publicly, so if you want to hear them all, you're going to have to sign up at the $8 level. That supports me making this show, and and also just supports me living my life, doing my thing. Thank you so much. My guest this month on Patreon is Sarah Kiley, who is an artist and animator. She's amazing. I just put that episode up a couple days ago. And before I get into my interview with James, let me tell you a couple things that are going on in my life. Thanks so much to those of you who donated or pledged to my Hobbit Houses of America Kickstarter that I mentioned in the last episode. I made my goal. I made a few thousand dollars over my goal, and I am excited to make 3 new episodes featuring Hobbit Houses that you can visit right here in the United States. Getting started working on that. There is a lot going on with Shipwrecked Comedy. If you are a podcast listener and you are not listening to The Case of the Greater Gatsby, the audio narrative podcast that we are currently putting out right now, you are missing out. It is full of so many hilarious performances and many twisty mysteries. And this week we are recording 2 new Vivian Nightingale songs, which if you know Shipwrecked, you know that is the lounge singer character that I play in this world. And these songs are written by our incredible composer, Dylan Glathorn, who has been a guest on this podcast. And they're just bangers. I'm really excited for you to hear them. And not only that, if you are a fan of Shipwrecked and would like to help us make our project that we will be premiering at Buffer Festival this year in Toronto, we are currently doing a very low-key crowdfund through PayPal. I will provide a link in the show notes where you can get all the info about that. And if you want to throw us a few dollars, we will very much appreciate it. It'll be our first time shooting a project, like shooting a filmed project since Headless? Is that true? In like a year and a half? I think that's true. So we're pretty excited about it, and we could definitely use your help. All right, those are the updates from me. So I will go ahead and let us get straight into this interview with James. This interview was conducted in April of 2021, so obviously a lot of things have changed since then, but James shares some very interesting tidbits about his story and his work that he does with StarKid and beyond, so it's definitely still worth listening to, and I hope you will enjoy it. All right, without further ado, let's talk to James Tolbert. Hey, James!
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for joining me for this. I am so excited to have you.
I'm so excited that you even asked me to be here. That's I never brought this up, but I used to host a podcast.
Oh, really?
Years ago. Yeah, it was centered around activism and politics. It was
amazing.
Called We Rebel. Uh-huh. And it was with 2 friends of mine from college at the University of Michigan.
That's
and
so cool.
We did something like 75 episodes of it.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
It was fun, but we stopped in 2018, I think, is the last time.
Wow.
So yeah, this is the first time I'm on as a guest of a podcast.
Well, I have to say, I so appreciate your enthusiasm when I asked you about this, and also like the Spider-Verse reading, and I just everything we've asked you to do, you've been like super game for it. And I know that's like so silly, but I don't know. It's just nice when people are like excited to do things, because I feel like sometimes when you're like asking friends to do stuff, you're like, hey, like, do you mind? And you're just afraid they'll be like, okay, whatever. But you've been very enthusiastic, and we really appreciate that.
Oh, well,
and I really appreciate that.
Oh, well, no, thank you. Seriously, because I mean, I've seen the work that you've done, and I have to praise you for a second, because the amount of passion that you have for everything that you do is so beautiful. I love seeing creators like yourself who just pour their all into whatever aspect it may be, whether it's audio, visual, like you come at everything with fresh eyes, amazing takes, and 1,000% of your energy. So props to you.
Goodness. Can I quote you on my website? Oh my gosh. What a wonderful.
Please do. Verbatim. Use the whole everything. Yes. Whatever
that
you need.
That is so kind. Thank you so much. That makes me feel so good. Well, I'm so excited to talk to you today because you are a relatively new person in my circle in terms of like, you know, a lot of like Joey I've known since 2013 and like a lot of people that I've had on, I've known for a long time and I've worked with a lot, but I didn't actually meet you until last year when you were doing Black Friday.
Right.
And we all saw you in that, we all being like me and Sean, my boyfriend, and other people in Shipwrecked, and we were like, who is that? And we're like, he is great, and we want to know him. And so I'm excited to get to know you, but like, I didn't know you did a podcast. I was looking at some of the questions people sent in, and apparently you worked at Disneyland. Is this true?
I still technically do work for
Disneyland. Oh my God, I didn't realize. See, I should have done more research, because you seem like you've done so many interesting and awesome things, and I'm very excited to learn more about you and all those things.
I'm an open book, so please, whatever you want to ask, I'm here to talk about.
Well, let's just start with, if you don't mind, your just kind of creative journey and like whatever that means to you, like your life story in terms of like when you were younger, deciding that this is what you wanted to pursue, and like how you've sort of ended up here in your life.
Yeah. So I love telling the story because, the day I knew I wanted to be an actor. it actually goes back to when I was about 3 years old.
Wow.
And I was obsessed with the movie Home Alone.
Really?
Yes. Just I knew every line of that movie. At
you
the age
and
of three.
You and Sean should talk about it. He loves Home Alone.
Oh, well, then we have much to discuss.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that's just ingrained in you. Like, uh-huh. I remember the inflections of certain lines.
Oh,
That's how much that movie meant to me. But also because I would just constantly watch the movie, rewind it, watch it again, the way that most kids would watch Barney or Sesame Street. That mm-hmm. was Home Alone was that for me. And so mm-hmm. my mom, she saw just the performative aspect of me watching this movie and quoting it. And so she said, he probably should do something with acting, mm-hmm. right? Something in there. If he wants to be an actor, I think he should probably learn how to dance. Uh-huh. So really, everything started with dance for me.
Mm-hmm.
I started at the age of three as a tap dancer.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. There's a That's picture of me in my my parents' basement with just this white suit with gold sequined lining and a gold hat, just glitter everywhere.
Gosh, amazing.
And it was to One from A Chorus Line. That was the song that we danced to. And it just kind of took off from there. Dance mm-hmm. really just took over my life because I just did it for fun. And then around the age of seven, I was approached to join the competition team.
Oh, okay.
Because they needed more boys.
Where did you grow up? You grew up in Michigan?
Oh, yes, yes. So yeah, I grew up in, born in Detroit and then grew up in Sterling Heights, which is just outside.
Gotcha.
And yeah, and so I started doing competition dance, which is, I've always said that in the way that the movie Bring It On talks about cheerleading, mm-hmm. I need to make a movie about dance competitions.
I'm honestly kind of shocked that we haven't had that yet.
Right?
Now that like you say that.
Yeah, we have dance moms, but that's its own thing, which
yeah.
a lot of that is true and very scary, but we need to do something about dance competitions because it is its own world and its own just energy that is unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
And in dance competition, it teaches you a lot about technique, precision. It's because everything, you know, you need to be in unison, especially when I was dancing mm-hmm. at the time. I realized that probably a little bit later on that though dance competition was fun, teaches you all these elements, I still was doing that performer thing. The prime example was when I had a solo. It was to a mashup of two Lou Bega songs. That's mm-hmm. right, Lou Bega, right? Throwback. I was mouthing the lyrics mm-hmm. while I was doing my solo, which dance competition isn't about that. They're not here for your words. They're watching you dance. But I just had that natural showmanship. I wanted to, you know, do that. Yeah. And so I remember my mom took me when I was about six or seven to see the touring production of 42nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it blew my mind. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it is everything you want out of a Broadway musical. We're talking the hopeful ingenue. We're talking about the overconfident but extremely talented tenor. Huge set pieces. The dancing in unison and tapping and lights. And it's Broadway just thrown at you for 2 hours. And it mm-hmm. I fell in love with it. It mm-hmm. was amazing. And I'd never seen dance done in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just opened my eyes to seeing that theater was the itch that I wanted.
Yeah.
So I started doing some community theater at a really young age. My first show was Fiddler on the Roof. Yes, very my show. That's exactly what I should be doing. The pictures are so cute.
I bet.
So I did that. And so I did a lot of community theater. And for the most part, I just kind of stuck with dance. And I would take, acting classes and things like that. It wasn't until I got into, well, I'm skipping over some details, but in between, I did commercials as a kid.
Oh, you did? Okay,
I did, cool. Yeah. Like Kmart and a dental commercial and oh gosh, I'm now having a flashback of all the things I've done. We don't have to go into detail.
No, let's hear it.
But I won this competition when I was in the third grade. They used to let local kids co-host the local Thanksgiving Day parade.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like this little tiny 8-year-old on Channel 4.
And you got to do that? That's amazing.
I got to do it. Yes. And it was so much fun.
That's
oh my
so
gosh.
Cool. Dang.
They treat you like a. Yeah, they treat you like a local celebrity for like a week. It's really,
I'm sure,
really amazing. So I did that. I did these. I did a production of what was called the Harlem Nutcracker, which was Duke Ellington's reimagining of the Nutcracker, with more like jazz orchestrations and arrangements. And so as I was doing more theater and that, but competition was still the main thing. I was always doing dance competitions. So finally, I ended up doing a. I was a background dancer for Mary J. Blige I'm just, throwing that in there. I was a background dancer for Mary J. Blige when she was performing at the halftime show at the Lions game in 2003.
Oh, my gosh.
And from doing that, and I kind of went to my high school and said, oh, yeah, put that on the bulletin board. I did something. The man that was in charge of our drama program said, hey, we need guys to dance in our spring musical. James, would you like to join? And I thought, okay, why not? I haven't done a show in a while. And I remembered how much I loved it and how much fun it was. But then this was unique because that was the time that I watched the kids that were singing and acting. And I thought, I kind of want to do that. So it was a pivotal moment for me to decide that I was done doing dance competitions. And so that was it. So starting my sophomore year, I quit dance in that way and started focusing more on theater. And I did all the school plays. We had, because I went to all boys high school and we had a sister school as well. So I would do the shows at my school and theirs.
Wow.
And it just made me kind of fall in love with just being on stage and performing in that way. So fast forward to senior year, I knew I wanted to go to the University of Michigan. That was number one, wanted to do it. I was going to go to become an English teacher.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Because it was my favorite subject all of my years in school, and I loved literature. See, thank you. You get it. And I also I feel like everyone has that moment, especially with an English teacher, where they just, you read that book and it just sticks with you, and the way that they describe it to you. And I and it's still with me today, that element of wanting to be a teacher and to impart knowledge and impact a student in that way. And so that's why I wanted to be an English teacher. Well, at the time, our director of our shows, we had kind of just joked about the musical theater program at Michigan, and I hadn't looked at really any other schools. But he said, well, I mean, it's worth a shot. Why don't you just audition? So I had already gotten into the school for the literature, science, and arts program. And so I said, sure, I'll just send in an application, a separate one, just to see if they'll let me audition. And they did. I'm sure your listeners and people now are well more versed in the culture of auditioning for college musical theater. I cannot tell you how ignorant I was about that process.
Really?
I knew nothing because, like, no one really talked about that.
Yeah.
That was not something that was brought up, especially even in our drama program. To give you an example of how much I didn't know, I walked in with only the two songs they required you to walk in with, which everyone knows. You need to have a book. You need 16-bar cuts. Like, you need options.
All of that, yeah.
I remember walking down the hallway, and everyone was dressed in their jewel-tone dresses and button-up shirts and pants and shoes. I walked in with a Hollister sweatshirt and some jeans. Because that's what we did at my school, I didn't know anything, but I just went in and I just went as myself, and I just auditioned, and I knew what I knew about musical theater, which was limited at the time. But, you know, if they saw something in me, I was hoping like that would be the next step. And luckily enough, it was. I was admitted. I think there were 20 students in our class out of 500 that auditioned.
So
went to Michigan and started talking to people about their process, you realize all these schools and the amount of time that you're traveling all over the country, you're doing unified auditions. It's I commend any student that goes into that, because at such a young age, you don't know what you're walking into. You're just kind of like hoping that I'm enough. Yeah. And odds are, if you're listening to this, you are enough. Please know that. So yeah, the long and short of Michigan was just, you know, I learned so much. It was it was honestly one of the most eye-opening experiences. And I think that could have happened at any school, but because college is a pivotal time for that.
Yeah.
But I grew so much as a performer. And, you know, I walked into school not even knowing who Stephen Sondheim was. I couldn't even pick him out on the street if you told me he was right in front of me.
Yeah.
And now he is probably my favorite composer I've ever listened to in my life.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And so something that was born out of my time in Michigan was becoming a choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of opportunities to do student choreography while you're at the school. We had a student workshop, and then we also had a student-run musical theater program called Musket.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would choreograph some pieces for our student workshop, and then one day someone approached me and said, hey, we need a choreographer for Kiss of the Spider Woman. Could you do it?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm around. Sure, I'll do that. And I had never choreographed a full show before. I didn't know really what that meant. I knew how to choreograph like a single piece and then work from there. And I just kind of like, I was winging it. I was working with people who had never danced in their lives and people who were experienced modern dancers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you create a vocabulary out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Especially for your first show. I'm not going to say it was the greatest thing I've ever done, but it was reminiscent of those 90s ragtag movies where you're like, hey, we're going to get these people together and make a show. We're going to get this going. And we did. And honestly, it was one of the most rewarding experiences for me because it taught me how to work with all levels of people. And it challenges me as a creator, as a choreographer, to expand my horizons and understand that dance is a language in and of itself. So you can communicate whatever you want through that movement. It can be a kick as high as behind your ear, or it can be low to the ground, but there's intent behind it. You know, as long as you're putting some story behind it, you can do whatever you want on that stage. And luckily, it was right after doing that Kiss of the Spider Woman that summer that I was approached to do a Harry Potter sequel. So they kind of, one went to the other. And so that was my introduction to StarKid. Because the year before, I'd sat in that audience for what felt like 7,000 hours to watch the first one.
Did you?
And, oh, yeah. I was there. It was hot. It was sweaty. But we all had fun. But yeah, so I remember watching the first Harry Potter musical. And then it was so surreal to the next year after watching it blow up and everyone was so on board with it that I they approached me to choreograph the sequel. And so same thing. It was like only the second show I'd ever done. So if I look at that choreography now and I want to slap myself because I made these people do the hardest stuff in the world because I was just throwing everything I could at them. But they did it so well and they had so much fun. And that is the heart of StarKid. It's no matter what the material, no matter what we're doing, we're going to go out there and give it 1,000%. And it always shows. And so I've loved that. And so honestly, from there, I graduated college. I know I'm skipping ahead, but it's college. Oh. We all know what happened there.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I graduated class of 2011 and moved straight to New York. And about a few months later, booked my first national tour of Mary Poppins.
Wow.
Yeah, which was such a wonderful show. And even just having the opportunity to tour the country.
Yeah.
I think because of that tour alone, I've been to 22 states.
Wow.
And just from that tour.
Amazing.
And we also went to parts of Canada as well. And that's what made me realize I love to travel. Traveling is so much fun, and just experiencing new places and cultures. It's so wonderful. So if anyone ever has a chance to do a national tour, I highly recommend you do it. And whenever you go, find a speakeasy and figure out what their rules are, because that's what makes every place unique, is finding that speakeasy. And there's one in Wisconsin. I won't give you the password. But if you if you don't know the password, they make you do some like funny little trick or whatever, something to embarrass yourself, right? And then when you walk in, you realize that there was a TV screen that was recording you the whole time.
Oh my God.
And everyone was watching it.
That's hilarious.
Yes. I love that. I highly recommend that. Also, my thing on tour was finding comic book stores.
Nice.
That was really cool. So I'd find a comic book store everywhere I went. After Mary Poppins, I then joined the Las Vegas company of Mamma Mia.
Oh, wow.
Which was, it was the second, because they had a sit down before that and then they brought it back. And unfortunately, it was short-lived due to a dispute between venue and producer. But that did lead me to working on the cruise ship. And so I did the Mamma Mia, first takeout of Mamma Mia on a cruise ship directly right after that. And so that gave me a chance to travel the world. I went to Germany for the first time, Spain, England. And then we cruised out from here and we went to like the Bahamas. We went to Labadee, Barbados, like a whole bunch of places.
And,
they all kind of just like one led to the other. I have worked regionally at Kansas City Starlight, the Muni in St. Louis. And so then my life story. I hate that. I always feel weird talking about.
I am fascinated and I'm so glad. And you are surely one of the most accomplished people I've ever met in my life. No idea.
Oh, my goodness.
You've done so many amazing and just like interesting and different things. So please do not feel bad about talking about all of them. This is so incredible.
One day I will get rid of that imposter syndrome and it won't plague me as I speak about myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, you understand. So after the cruise ship and I did that, I was in New York for a little bit. And then I was at a real turning point where I was kind of done with New York. Which is the thing that a lot of people go through. I'm sure you'll talk to more people about that. And because life just has that way of bringing those things to a point, I ended up getting a contract for Lion King in Hong Kong Disneyland.
What?
And so I thought, hey, it's a sign. I should probably take this contract and then I can leave New York. And so I did.
That's incredible.
It happens like that. And wow. I took the contract to play Simba in Lion King and Hong Kong Disneyland.
James, yes. That's so cool.
Yes. And that was so much fun too, because I got to live in Hong Kong. I was a resident there. I was there for about a total of 9 months. And that was just a great experience of just being over there. I didn't have to learn any Cantonese, but they, for the most part, they don't want you to unless you really know it, because it's rather offensive to like butcher their language. They're like, just stop. Just point to just what you want and get out of my face.
Yeah.
But being over there, I was able to at least travel. I traveled to Thailand for a little bit and Tokyo, Japan, which is one of my favorite places in the world. It's so cool. I love it. So cool. It's a really clean New York City. And they just, and the people are just so nice and I love it. So if you get a chance to go, do
it. I'd love to.
Wow. I did that. And then I moved to LA really to focus more on a film, TV writing career.
Oh, really?
That was really the goal, was that I loved theater and I still love theater. At the time, I wasn't happy with the place I was at with theater, which was I was kind of doing a lot of more chorus stuff, which is fine. I'm just aware of, after, you know, dancing since I was 3, my body was starting to say, you should rethink what we're doing here.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And I have a host of injuries. I had hip surgery when I was 17. I still have the scar to show it. And that was just from years of dancing. And also because I played sports at the same time as dance, and I had a track injury that basically pretty much took my hip socket apart. And no one knew about it for 5 years. Like, we went to every doctor and no one knew what was going on.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was still dancing on a hip that was not in place.
Oh, yikes. Sounds bad.
It was. It absolutely was. It was. So with a host of injuries, you know, I was starting to rethink my career and what I wanted to do. And that's when I came up with, you know, really considering the aspect of becoming a writer, which is something I'm still evolving, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But I came out to LA with the intention of starting a film TV writing career. As life happens, I got roped into more and more theater as I got out here, which was so funny, and just doing little projects here and there. But I took classes at the Groundlings, which was so much fun. And I highly recommend anyone that wants to be an actor, get in an improv class. Mm-hmm. It allows you to get out of your head and out of your own way so much. And just being able to use your imagination on the spot like that is such, when you watch real improvisers do their thing,
yeah,
it's magic. It is.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's incredible. And I will always, like, Jim Rash, one of my favorite improvisers in the world. He is so good. And I,
that's cool.
It's so amazing.
Believe it. I've never, I mean, I know of him and I've obviously loved him on Community and stuff, but I've never seen him, like, in an improv show. That's cool.
I think I saw this man climb up on the, you've seen the Groundlings stage, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. He climbed up that little, like, opening at the top of the stage, like, in, like, 0.5 seconds. I don't know how he did it, but just to complete the bit, he did it. It was a marvel. I was amazed. So I took classes at the Groundlings. I would start taking some dance classes with different friends. But because life and time is a flat circle, I ended up getting an offer to work at Disneyland out here. And so I joined the Red Car Trolley Newsboys.
Oh!
Yes.
Are they the ones that are like Suitcase and a Dream?
That's us.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Yep, that was us. So I joined as a Johnny and a Kip. I think I can talk about this. Whatever, it's fine. The show's closed. I was a Johnny and a Kip, and it was so much fun to do that show because that one had been around at least 6 or 7 years by the time I joined it, but it's such a staple. And I'm really sad that the show closed. I was able to close it as Johnny, so I was the last Johnny for the show.
Did it close because of the pandemic, or did it just close? They were like, we're done.
They closed it actually about 8 months before the pandemic.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So they did that. Concurrently with the Newsboy show, I opened up a new version of Lion King at this park at Disneyland.
Oh.
So I was Simba again
in
a newly conceived version of the Lion King for Disneyland. And that was really rewarding because I got to just kind of be like the first one, you know, to do that. And it's really an honor to take on a property like that. I think it's at this point their highest grossing. Well, at least I know the Broadway show is like one of like the highest grossing Disney properties they have. Once I finished that, Black Friday happened. And I know before that, Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals also did. And so so I had a break from Starkid, came back, choreographed that. Had to leave.
I forgot that you had choreographed.
Right. And it was funny because I had all this pre-planning done to choreograph Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals. And then I booked the Disney job for Red Car. So I only had 2 weeks to choreograph about 75% of the show.
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh.
And so luckily we had a genius like Lauren Lopez on the team who was able to fix all the odds and ends and make the show as great as it was.
Yeah.
So a full year later is when Black Friday comes up. And I luckily this time, in part because I had time off from Disney and then also because the fans were so generous and we had such a great fundraiser for the 10th anniversary and Black Friday, I was able to join the cast. Which is something I've always wanted to do, but, you know, I'd always said, like, if the time is right and you've got something for me, I'd love to be there. And so luckily it worked out. So I played Xander Lee and Security Guard and something else. I did a bunch of things there.
Well, I thought you were fantastic in it, and I feel like you should have been in casts long before because you're great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's really cool to be in the show with everyone, and you know everybody, and so you know like just the way the camaraderie that you get working with friends like that, and also because it's not a guarantee when you work with friends that you're gonna get the desired product that you want, but.
Right.
Everyone just has this mindset of how can we make this great? And and no one, there's no jealousy. There's no, you know, animosity. It's just we're always constantly hyping up the other person, admiring another performance. And I think that's what makes it so great. And I think that reads. I think that's why people are attracted to the StarKid brand so much because it feels like a family. And it is. It is that.
Yeah.
So, once Black Friday happened, we fast forward to the global pandemic.
Yeah.
Where everything just kind of went to a halt.
Yeah.
And it's been and I'm sure you and I can talk at length about what it's like to have been an actor in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
But just to have everything kind of essentially taken away, you know, we don't have that ability to perform on that stage. I miss it so much. I was just talking about that with some other people, how being on a stage and getting that immediate reaction is something so unique and so visceral that, you know, to have gone this long without it is strange. And, and you know, I did the readings with you and we've done the readings with Starkid and things like VHS Christmas Carol. And it's great to see the comments.
Which you were great in, by the way, and we loved so much. And we were always playing all the songs. We're big fans of Clark Baxtresser in this house. And I thought that was so good, and the music was so good, and your song especially is just like one of the best ones and so catchy, and we loved it so much.
Thank you so much. I mean, listen, if you want to be the president of the Clark Baxtresser fan club, I'll at least be treasurer, because
perfect.
That man,
he's incredible.
What can he not do? He's so brilliant.
Yeah, agreed.
So like, it was really cool to do these virtual things over the past year, and I'm so glad we are at the technological age that we are now, that we have that. And and also it does help me with I've always been a big proponent of theater being an accessible thing for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, we're at a point now where, because Broadway is a commercial business, it's honestly going to the highest bidder. And so the tickets are astronomically high. I mean, even when I was in New York, I couldn't see everything because the tickets were so astronomically expensive.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I'm still trying to pay my rent. So I can't drop that much money.
No.
So I'm glad that at least the one good thing that came out of this year was the way that we could still provide art to people and put it in an accessible way. So that has been a bright spot. The point of me saying that was that things are starting to come back and things are starting to happen. So I'm excited to see where we go from here.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just in awe. You're so well-spoken and so accomplished. And I had no idea you'd had such an interesting life and you've done so many cool things. I'm just so impressed.
Oh, thank you.
Do you feel like you've been able during this time to sort of also focus on writing, if that's something that you're like, you know, wanting to continue to pursue?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's been a process in which I've had to be patient with myself. And this is something that I've talked about with my therapist, which I'm very happy to say, like, therapy is a wonderful thing. And if you ever consider doing it, please do.
Yeah.
We all need it.
Agreed.
The writing kind of was born out of, you know, a frustration of not really seeing a place for myself in the business and feeling like I didn't have that avenue that I knew where to go.
Yeah.
So I had actually written a script when I lived in New York that I was ready to produce. It was going to be a web series at the time. And then the reason I had to stop it was because the day before we started the Kickstarter, I had booked Mamma Mia in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to take that job and I'll just wait and do this. Well, the waiting turned into, as many projects go, where it's like, the idea left me. And now it's over there somewhere in Botswana. Yeah. So the writing has always been in the back of my head. And especially in this last year where I felt, which I'm sure a lot of actors felt, was I need to make something. I need to do something. Yeah. You know, this pressure to produce some sort of content.
Yeah.
And I had realized that it's not good to put that kind of pressure on me. It gives me a special kind of anxiety. And then I'm producing work that A, isn't good, B, doesn't speak to me.
Yeah.
So probably about a month ago, I finally landed on an idea to write about that I actually am very excited. I won't go into too much detail about what it is, but what I will talk about is what I want to do in this industry. And that is, I want to kind of bring back the thing that made me love entertainment, which is dance and story and how I can weave the two together. So I want to kind of bring back what made the golden age of the Busby Berkeley production numbers and dance and things like that. I want to do that, but in a modern setting. And I don't want it to be such a foreign thing. I think if we compare it to the way that music videos are shot, compare it to the way that movies treat choreography, and here's my soapbox, I feel like movies now, when it comes to choreography, they use choreography as kind of a backdrop where I want to integrate choreography as part of the story so that it is just as important as a spoken word of a scene between two people.
That's so cool, and I love that, and I commend you for that. I love So You Think You Could Dance, and that's one of my favorite things about that show. I haven't watched it in a long time, but when it was like really popular, I felt like the stories that they were able to tell through just the choreography was so fantastic and so incredible. And you're totally right. Like, why aren't we doing more of that and more like mainstream way.
Absolutely. And like, yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've seen all the things Mia Michaels has done.
Yes, she's with incredible. Her choreography.
She is.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I can't gush enough about her.
Yeah.
She's so cool.
Yeah. Agreed. That's so awesome. Well, yes. I'm really excited for this for you and
Thank
for me.
You. Thank
I can't
you.
Wait to see it when it happens.
Yes.
So is that like, I was going to ask like where, you know, where you want to be going from here? Is that like your main focus? It sounds to me like clearly the world has offered you some really incredible opportunities and you seem like very open to, you know, just like seeing what the universe brings you and going on those adventures. And I really admire that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's a great and terrible thing.
Because,
you know, for some people, like, if they know for a fact they're going this specific avenue, it's direct and they've got that. I am one of those people who wants to do everything.
Yeah.
And I have to learn to maybe scale that back a little bit and focus on one thing at a time. I am right now in a process of wanting to focus on acting, mm-hmm. but if I have the free time and the emotional mental capacity, I write mm-hmm. and I try mm-hmm. to formulate this and try to get that on its feet.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me like, I mean, yeah, you've just done so many amazing things and clearly that's like made you such a well-rounded and like cool person because you've gotten to experience so many things. I'm so amazed. I'm like, as a person who grew up in Arkansas for 18 years and then moved to Los Angeles and has lived here ever since, you know, like, and that's like fine. Like I knew that that's what I always wanted to do is to move to LA and pursue what I'm doing. And I'm doing it and I'm happy to be doing it. But like hearing about you traveling the globe and like doing all these cool things, like that's just so, it's so awesome.
Oh yeah. Please tell me, I want to ask you a question. Tell
okay,
me about
fine.
Moving from Arkansas to LA. Like that had to have been a huge culture shock, right?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't. I went to USC and I moved for college, and hearing you talk about like, I did audition for some musical theater programs, not Michigan. I don't know why Michigan like wasn't on my radar. But I did audition for some musical theater programs at some schools like OU and SMU, and I didn't get into any. And mm-hmm. But that was okay because I never really thought that like New York was for me. I always, always, always wanted LA, and mm-hmm. I can't explain why. I mean, it's just, I guess, where I was meant to be, and I just knew it. And so I came out for USC, and I think that is honestly like the best possible way because I had these 4 years of just like being in this nice, safe little like college environment, sort of getting to know like the town and the industry, mm-hmm. which isn't to say like, obviously I graduated and then I started trying to do the acting thing and boy, oh boy, it was just like
oh
trial by fire.
Yep.
And it definitely took me some time to figure it out. But yeah, I just always knew that this is where I wanted to be. And as I like remember getting off the plane for the first time whenever I came to visit LA to like look at colleges, and I just was like, I'm home. Like, yes, this is it. And I still feel that way, even, you know, even though it's so expensive and whatever, but it's
right.
Fine. I love it here.
For some reason, I've lived in like two of the most expensive cities in this country, you know, because of this business.
Uh-huh.
But something you said, and I think it's very true, you know, you end up in the place that you're meant to be, you know, and no matter what, like as hard as it may be and all the paths that we have to take, you get to where you're supposed to be. And you definitely are because you're crushing it. You're doing great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that you will, like, are you happy in LA for, like, the, you know, foreseeable future, you think?
I love it. Like, I was driving today, and just being out, I had my windows down. I could see the road ahead of me. I love that feeling. I mm-hmm. love living in LA.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make sure that my boyfriend still feels that way in, like, a few years. But I love living out here. It's everything I've wanted it to be.
Yeah, I do too. I agree. Well, tell me more, if you don't mind, about working at Hong Kong Disney. I think that's incredible. I have like a goal to maybe someday go to every single Disneyland.
You can do it. And side note, there are people who do that. And
I think Corey Lubowich has done it, I think.
I don't doubt that for a second. I can 100% see that happening.
Yeah.
No, in fact, there are, there's a cute couple. Oh, they were so adorable. They all they do all year is just travel around the world to go to every park. And when I was working in Hong Kong, they start to familiarize themselves with the cast members that are performing in certain shows. Mm-hmm. And they would bring buttons for those cast members.
That's so cool.
I'm not going to say for legal purposes that I received those buttons.
Sure.
But just saying that they are brought to the park by these guests. That's all I'm saying. Yes. And so working in Hong Kong, it's so because Hong Kong was under British rule until 1996, I believe was the exact year, it's very westernized. Mm. They're currently right now in the middle of a basically a repatriation to China. Mm-hmm. And so they're in their transition. But at the time, you go to that park and pretty much any announcement you've heard at Disneyland, you'll hear it in English and then you'll probably hear it in Cantonese first, then English, then Mandarin. So everything's kind of just laid out for the native speaking guests. Mm-hmm. It's laid out pretty much the same because Disney is the brand. So they're really just selling you the idea and the image of the parks. But it's wonderful. You know, everything is just kind of laid out exactly as how you would see it here in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you see the language written out and but it's still a multicultural experience. You have people literally from all over the world coming to these parks,
right.
For the same reason that you brought up, that there are people who just love going to, you know, and they've ridden the teacups in 7 different countries, you know, at this point, like they just want to do it. And, and I'm glad because, you know, Disney, is that nostalgia factor for so many people. So it's cool.
I feel like, I never was, Sean loves Disney and they would, when they grew up, they would go to Disney World every summer. And like, he just has this ingrained love of like going to Disneyland and whatever. And I grew up watching Disney movies. And I actually, like, the first thing I thought I wanted to do when I was a kid was be a Disney animator. Like, I thought that's the job that I wanted. And I don't really have a lot of artistic skills, so that wasn't on the cards. But so I loved Disney. But I, as like an adult, like going to Disneyland was never really my thing until I met Sean, and like he loves it so much that it's made me love it so much. And of course, we here in Southern California are like so lucky that we have Disneyland very close, and it's like, you know, you can get an annual pass, although not anymore, but you know, you could like go a lot, and it's just like a very cool thing that we have access to here. And the thing about Disneyland is that it's like the first one, the original, and there's all this like nostalgia about it and around it, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But then we've like looked at some of the like ride throughs for some of the newer rides in like Hong Kong and Shanghai and Tokyo Disney, and they look incredible. And we're like, oh my gosh, we have to go like check this out.
I want to ride that Tron coaster. So
yes,
bad.
I know.
It looks so cool.
It does. It looks so cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're big Disney fans.
I love it.
Well, can I ask you a few questions from my patrons?
Please do.
Wonderful. Jazz asked if you have a favorite Disney snack.
Ooh. Oh, what a great question.
Yeah, it's a pretty good question.
Oh my gosh. Popcorn. The popcorn. Because you
popcorn.
Can smell it from
That's
a mile
Sean's
away.
That's Sean's favorite, too.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we're on the same page then.
Yeah.
That popcorn, you could be across the park and the cart is like nowhere near you, but you can smell it. And you're like, great, I'm going that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. See you all later.
It's magical.
Yes, it is.
You sort of briefly said this. Someone asked what it was like performing on a cruise ship. I am curious because that's something that I feel like, I mean, obviously you got to travel and see all these amazing places, which is cool, but I feel like the actually being on the ship, that kind of freaks me out a little bit just in terms of like feeling seasick or claustrophobic or whatever. Did you feel any of that or did you enjoy like being on the ship? And
Yeah. We could do a separate podcast just about my experience on the cruise ship. So I'm going to keep it to the more
shorter,
optimistic, shorter version.
Okay. That's fair.
What I will say is that me personally, I didn't have any motion sickness or anything. I think maybe the worst that I had was when we had we did the transatlantic crossing from England over to New Jersey.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And those waters are rough. So even then, I got a little bit queasy. There are people who had it way worse than I had.
Really?
The nurses always have Dramamine on, you know, and honestly, it's in little packets like Skittles. You're like, do you need some? Here, have it. So I didn't really deal with that too much. I will say dancing on a cruise ship is, especially on rocky waters, very interesting.
I can imagine.
Because you are, you know, you're performing on your stage. You jump up, the ship moves and tilts. So then when you come back down, the floor is closer than it was when you left it.
Ooh.
So that tent, that can happen.
It seems bad for your body.
Again, I there are things I could say, but I'm going to wait.
Sure, we
can do that another time. But here's what I will say. It was one of the most fulfilling aspects in terms of friendships because mm-hmm. I met people from literally all over the world.
Yeah.
And if for some reason you are interested in working on a cruise ship or you want to go that way, I highly encourage you to branch out of whatever your circle is because it is kind of segmented. You kind of are in your division and you kind of do things with your group. But I found it so rewarding to just meet people that do all kinds of things. I'm talking about your deck crew, your custodians, the people that are working the restaurants. Like, just branch out because mm-hmm. the stories that I learned and just being immersed in different cultures. And I will give a shout out. The Filipino crew members are the coolest people in the world.
Yeah.
The food is amazing. Their singing is incredible. They have the best parties. Like, they were the coolest people ever. What a fantastic culture. Like, everything yeah. about, they were so cool. So when you branch out and when you learn from these people, it makes yeah. that experience one of the best things you'll ever do.
Yeah. That's yeah. awesome. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm super impressed. Like I said, I don't know if that's something I could ever do, but I do think everything you're saying about, like, yeah, I don't know, it's just important to see the world if you can and, mm-hmm. like, get to know people outside of your own, you know, where you grew up or whatever, your own culture that you're used to. It's just so fulfilling and just makes you a more well-rounded person, I think. That's so cool.
Absolutely.
All right, last question. This mm-hmm. has been so delightful hearing from you. Alyssa says, what is something you've changed or learned this year that you plan to take with you when the world gets back to normal?
That is a great question.
That was a deep one.
Yeah, and I love that. I've learned to give myself more time and more patience.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, we all had to slow down in this last year for a multitude of reasons. And in doing that, in doing a lot of more introspection, I've been able to grow in ways that I probably wouldn't have because I was so focused on the hustle and I have to move on to the next thing. And I constantly have to.
Yeah.
And finally, when I had a chance to just sit in my own space, in my own silence, I learned so much.
Yeah.
And I think we all could afford to do that.
Yeah.
Because we're probably not listening to our bodies,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way that we should be. Mm-hmm. We're probably not listening to each other the way that we should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope to move forward with a level of awareness of self and acceptance of others and an ability to see the world for the beauty that it is rather than what it should be. And I'm using air quotes on the should because we could evolve in so many ways if we just gave ourselves the space to listen and learn. So I'm walking into this, again, quotes, new world with a sense of optimism and ready and willing to learn more.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited for that.
Boy, how profound. You are, I'm just so amazed. And I agree. I definitely relate. And I can obviously, just listening to your story, tell that you are just such a doer. And I'm the same. Like, I can't really sit still in a lot of ways. And I love to just constantly be doing all that I can do, whether that's like traveling and seeing new things and like eating new foods and experiencing new things, but also like creating new things. Obviously, like, acting is hard, and my patrons know it's been a sometimes great, sometimes terrible journey. And I'm constantly like trying to do what I can to keep myself fulfilled creatively. And that can mean creating things I never thought I would. But yeah, this time has been so important and in some ways I think necessary for those of us who like can't quite sit still to really take a minute to like do sit still and think about ourselves and our relationships and where we want to be. And I do hope, it's so interesting, like, because I started this particular podcast in like August of last year, I guess, July maybe. And how the conversation is shifting from, like, you know, it was like, how are you doing? What are you being able to do in this time? And now we are hopefully maybe starting to see that we're going to be coming out of it, hopefully, you know, within the foreseeable future, and thinking about like, yeah, like here we are taking this time into a somewhat of a return to normal. And I hope that I'm like worried. I love what you said about like taking all of this into the future and making it a better future. And I hope that we can do that. Obviously, like so much has happened outside of the pandemic in terms of like BLM and and recently with, you know, AAPI communities and all of this. But like, I hope that we don't come out of this and like, it's just like it never happened. Like, you know, people just get used to like going back to being busy all the time and like whatever, which part of me is like, I can see that, like, it'll just be like, huh, that was weird. And then it's like back to the grind as if it never happened. And I hope that that's not the case. I hope that collectively we all can like kind of be like, wow, this is what I've learned. And this is like how we need to make our world better and move forward with all of that into the future.
Yeah. And I feel that's a legitimate fear. And I get that. And my only counter to that would be, if we can't, you know, guarantee that everyone will be on the same page, at least us as artists, we can control that. And we can do that with our art. Yeah. You know, that's what's magical about what we do, is that we can start that trend. We can do that just with ourselves and what we do and what kind of content we put out there. And so that's where I'm at. It's like what I want to put out into the world is something that will evoke that and echo those sentiments. Mm-hmm. It may be flawed. It may not be the perfect way to do it. But I want to walk in and produce something where the people, A, can see themselves, see a different future, and but also be entertained by it. So that's what I'm going to focus on.
And I think this whole time, that was lovely. And I think this whole time, the importance of art has continued to like, you know, shine through in terms of like what we can do with art is so amazing and magical and so necessary. And, you know, that's a noble thing to be pursuing and to be trying to bring to the world. So, yeah. Well, gee, thank you so much, James. This was just like such a delight. I'm so amazed by you and so happy. I know everybody will love this so much. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. Again, thank you so much for asking me, because I don't like to hear my own voice sometimes. So I'm glad you wanted to listen to it for as long. I mean, I felt like I was talking for 6 hours. I'm so sorry.
No, you are so well spoken. I'm not even going to have to edit at all. It was just like, it was perfect. And I'm so glad to know more about you. And like, I'm just even more in awe of you than I was an hour ago. So thank you for sharing your story with us.
Of course. And thank you for having me.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you enjoyed that interview. I will be back in a couple weeks with another interview with Roxy McDaniel, who is a makeup artist. So if that's something you are interested in, I hope that you will tune in and listen. And as always, there's so much more where this came from on my Patreon at patreon.com/mkwiles. And it's not just podcasts. I also do live streams of games with my friends. You get to get the 411 on the things I'm auditioning for, which, yes, even though we are currently striking, I am still auditioning for commercials and some other things that are okay to work on during the strike. So if you would like to be a part of my closest inner circle team, I would love, love, love to have you join me on Patreon. And it's such a wonderful community. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you have a great day, and I'll be back in your ears soon. Bye. Dear Old World is recorded and edited by me, Mary Kate Wiles, with podcast art by Sophie Lesher and music by Dylan Glahorn.